sun comes back and the first quail calls. Follow the drinking.
Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. This CD is called Oh Freedom, Songs of the Civil Rights Movement. It is the work of many, many composers, but performed by Chris Villillo, who in the incredibly small world in which we live, I put in touch with my dear. He said, I wonder if this could ever be like a stage show, Rick. And I said, well, there's something there. You know, it's not going to be like one of those jukebox shows, but why don't you talk to my friend Ann Filmer? Mm-hmm. You met him. Hi, Ann.
Yeah, hi, Rick. How are you?
Ann is here with one of the stars of the current production at the 16th Street Theater. Ike Holter's play, The Wolf at the End of the Block. Tony Santiago plays Nunley. We will talk about the play eventually and try to convince you all to go see the play. In what I think, you know, we were talking about A Red Orchid Theater, Mike Shannon's place on Wells Street. That's an intimate space, but there's nothing as intimate, to my mind, as 16th Street. It's the ultimate intimate.
You think so? Yeah, it's funny because when I'm in Red Orchid, though, you know, because they're intimate in kind of this like long, you know, you're almost like in a hallway.
It's like an
kind
L
of way.
Shape.
Yeah. So mine's a little different. It feels like you're in like a small like TV room, you know, because it's the proscenium for us.
Yeah.
Well, but walking up to that really small building and then walking in and having to go down a flight of stairs.
Yeah, that city, like, that city of Berwyn.
Wait, this reminds me of the Park District where I grew up and whatever.
Totally.
It's in Berwyn. And since Ann has founded it, they have done a remarkable series of plays. This is the 11th season. That's almost
decade number two, right?
And Filmer, you came here. You're a California girl. You came here to sort of explore theater and
to take over the Berwyn theater scene
and work as a waitress. You did a lot. What drew you to Chicago?
Well, you know, I really, to be honest,
you're a dancer too.
Yeah, I ended up here by mistake because when you're from California and you know you're from the coast, you really don't. I mean, for real, you don't really don't know anything else, right?
Right,
so it's either like, oh, I'm going to go to L.A. or I'm going to go to New York and do some theater. But I got a summer stock gig because there was a connection with my San Jose State University. And so I did summer stock in Michigan. And when I was in Michigan, right outside Kalamazoo, that was when some people were like, hey, you should check out Chicago. And then one of the guys there, Keith Schneider, is like, hey, and I live there. So if you want to, like, you know, you can just like stay with me for a few days and get a job. And I was like, okay, cool, because I had no money, right?
Sure.
And I had no prospects. And I was like, I was totally ready for an adventure.
You know, a life in the theater, you probably have no money now.
Well, yeah, of course not.
You have
not.
A little
But now I'm just like, you know, that's just the way it is. And
how did you find it at first? Did you find it...
Chicago
10, 15 years ago
I felt
incredibly
no it was 93
longer.
It was 93
wow.
Yeah. when I got here and instantly I fell in love. I thought, you know, because in my mind, right, I had no picture of Chicago, no reference, no context, and I was walking down the streets and I was literally like, this is how I imagine Brooklyn to be, right? You know, I'd never been there either, but you know, in my like the film in my mind.
Don't go there now because it's not like anymore.
But just so neighborhoody and just a Midwestern city where people actually talk to you.
Sure. And what about the theater scene?
Oh,
when
my
you,
God.
You immediately dove in.
I was immediately, as I met Rich Katofsky right away, because I waited tables around
Mary
the corner
Archie,
from Mary Archie. And Katofsky was so great because he was like, you don't know anything and it doesn't matter. You can just hang out here anytime, right? There was no like, I'm not sure if you're good enough for this. He was like, hey, you want to learn about theater? Come hang out anytime after the pizzeria, Anna Maria Pizzeria, and come on by.
Tony Santiago, I have the feeling you came here a little after.
And
Filmer did about.
We won't talk about when he was born.
About maybe 10, 12 years ago from Richmond. What drew you here?
I think very similar to what Ann just said. It's I visited after college and was immediately drawn to how open everyone was to, hey, if you really want to be here and do the work, we have people and we have spaces that really want that energy. So. It was kind of like after a weekend of just hanging out with a few folks who'd been here a little longer that I was like, yeah, this feels like a group of people who are always looking out for each other. So I want to be a part of that and see where that goes.
You know, you two are basically both separated by a few years, members of what I consider the new generation, the post.
Oh, I like being new generation.
it's kind of the post you know, the move from the storefronts and we built big buildings and we're commercial and we have subscribers, and I'm sure you do too. Mm-hmm. But, and we are established. I mean, you guys are, and I use the term proudly, a kind of anti-establishment or
I like to be different. Subversive.
It's
like
not, being, it's subversive. Not so much, but I don't think it's so much subversive as it is just different. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of theater goers, some theater goers realize that. But, you know, you go to, you know, Jackalope Theater and you walk through, you know, former Armory and you go upstairs to that space. And even Red Orchid, for all of Michael Shannon's huge success, I think that way too. And I think there's a huge landscape out there now that represents a lot new. And I'm going to ask the two of you to devote some of this time before we sell your show to that. So I don't care if you came here in 93. I don't care if you came here in 83.
Agreed.
It's the spirit. The spirit.
It's the new wave. And I think you marking an 11th season of what you've been doing relatively quietly in a place like Berwyn is incredibly important. We got to take a little commercial break. But we'll come back and talk to both Ann Filmer, whose theater company, the 16th Street Theater, is putting on The Wolf at the End of the Block, starring, among many, Tony Santiago, who plays the boss of a guy who gets beat up at a cop bar or on the corner. It's terribly intriguing. This comes from someone who's been in cop bars. So we'll take a little break. Welcome back to After Hours. We are exploring the state of Chicago theater with two people who would know and two people who to my mind are changing the conventional face of Chicago theater. And that is no slam against, you know, the Goodman or Steppenwolf or the really established groups here who were pioneers in their time too. Ann Filmer, founder and runs the 16th Street Theater. That is, you can look this up after the show, 16th Street Theater, 16thstreettheater.org. She is currently, through May 5th, running The Wolf at the End of the Block by my friend. I think of Ike, and I hope he's not embarrassed. I mean, I've known him since he was like a kid. I know he went to college. I know he went to DePaul, and he studied. And I met him when he was the box office guy, the ticket taker at the Red Orchid Theater. Tony Santiago is one of the stars of Ike's play. You have a pretty interesting relationship with Ike, do you not?
I think Ike and I are definitely homies. Yeah, he's my brother. And
how did you meet?
How did we meet? We always try to figure this out. I think one day he had reached... Oh, he's seen me in shows before when Lily Ann Brown and I were in...
She's the director.
Of Wolf at the End of the Block. We were doing... David Cromer's Rent over at ATC, and so he'd seen me there with Lillian, and I think one night I did a reading for him at DePaul for one of his shows, and we've just been kind of like homies ever since.
He's the I don't know if you two write plays, but with all due respect to anybody else who writes plays, he's the grand playwriting talent of our time in Chicago.
He is, and I've been watching.
You've been watching him since the beginning.
Yeah, but it's great to, watching Wolf at the End of the Block just like night after night. And someone's a great writer when you can watch it each night and it gets deeper and deeper for you. I never, ever, ever get tired of listening.
Tell me what it was like. You first saw it at the famous Richard Christensen Theater in Victory
That's
Gardens.
That's right, I did.
You were blown away.
I was totally blown away. I literally thought I have not seen anything like this in so long. And I know people say edge of my seat, I was on the edge of my seat and I felt like I was holding my breath for the full 90 minutes. And I couldn't believe it. And I couldn't believe how fast they were talking and how exciting it was. And then any other show I ever saw after that, I was like, why are they talking so slow?
Wow.
But it was so exciting. And right away I was like, okay, this voice, this play, this story has to be done, you know, not just again in Chicago, but we're part of the National New Play Network, so I've been pitching it all across the country.
But that's another thing about this whole theater community here. I think there are a lot of people, you may be among them, listeners, who go to specific theaters. You may be subscribers. You may read a review or hear about another show, but oh no, honey, we usually go to so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
You've changed that dynamic, I think, by having that, and I think it's a beautiful small theater in Berwyn, the 16th Street Theater. Tony, your experience across this landscape here, mm-hmm. you have an organization, you're part of an organization mm-hmm. that believes in getting donors, not for a specific theater. Why don't you put your name on the back of a chair here? But why don't you give us money so we can provide free tickets to a lot of theaters? Tell me about that.
The organization is called Chicago Arts Access, and the website is freetix.org.
That's a good website.
TIX.org, yeah. And what's really amazing is that theaters like 16th Street that are focused not only on the programming, but its impact to its community is something that we really want to support. And, this stems from a really beautiful organization that no longer exists. That was Oracle Productions, where we understand that if a theater company really cares about its impact, they should not be restricted by ticket sales or subscribers. So if they're willing to put that programming out there, we are backed by 40 people, and they want to support that effort by sponsoring tickets for those who otherwise would not be able to.
That is such a great idea. I am so taken with this idea. How do you recruit? Mm-hmm. 16th Street is certainly, I would think, mm-hmm. I would hope, yeah. among the beneficiaries of this thing. How do you recruit and find? Is it because this is kind of like theater as activism, that mm-hmm. art that is meaningful, mm-hmm. that art that really connects community. So you go out and find theater companies who represent that aesthetic?
We are still really new, but essentially, yes, it can range from anywhere from, hey, we have this amazing show and we want this very specific group of folks to come out and see it, to, well, we've got 5 extra seats every night, and we hate to see that be wasted. So how can you help us make sure this theater stays full, because that improves the experience for the entire audience mm-hmm. and for the artists, because they know that there are people in that audience who are in need of that programming, because free local art builds community.
No question. No question. And also, I was out interviewing David Mamet a few weeks ago in mm-hmm. California.
Really?
The yeah. greatest playwright of his generation.
Yeah.
And David has initiated a rule now that there is no talk back at any production of his plays.
Yeah, I guess we won't do a David Mamet play.
Well, but I had an argument with him about that. It's literally like, what do you care?
Yeah,
you're not going to be there.
Did you get a sense? Yeah. Like why that feels like there needs to be a rule?
David's a very, he's a wonderful guy and a good writer, but he's a very peculiar human being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, why did you do that? Well, I don't like the idea of it.
I mean, too.
Which isn't, I love the idea of it. You know, you're doing talk back.
That's our thing. I mean, that's for me, theater is dialogue, and it does not stop when the curtain goes down. Not that we have a curtain, but
yeah, it does not stop with the standing ovation.
At the same time, talkbacks can be awful.
Oh,
I'm going to be completely frank with the idea of them sound amazing.
I never stay for them, but only at my own theater.
Well, because, in some cases, you're going to get just some one person who wants to tell you his life story.
Right.
Yes, I remember I was once in a bar and
this
happened, and it doesn't.
Well, I think the question really, though, is like, what's the function of them? And I think, Ike really pointed this out when Wolf at the End of the Block was happening at Victory Gardens, which was, because I actually understudied that show. So I've been really close to the show for over a year now. And as the way he puts it is, these talkbacks are an opportunity for audiences to get to know each other now that they've shared this experience, and what is that like? And the other thing, too, is that if you're a theater that's putting on a programming to an audience, what responsibility do you have to make sure that those folks have the right questions and the right information so that they can really chew on this in a way that's helpful for them and for everyone. Now.
Yeah, see, I could not agree. Talkbacks, it's like improv. You go to an improv, you can see some of the worst, you will fall asleep. Mm-hmm. But when it's right, it's amazing and life-altering. And I think the best of talkbacks where people are willing, because, you know, the other thing about life these days, Tony, and is we don't communicate by talking anymore. It's all this.
And right, right.
And it's an icy.
Or listening. And that's my favorite when it happens is when the audience, they are actually, you know, debating each other because, you know, they're speaking from their experiences.
Sure.
And then you realize the audience is not made up of like a monolith. It's not one kind of person. It's so many different people from different neighborhoods. Different, you know, economic,
different
everything. And then you actually can go, oh, interesting. I saw the play through my lens, but now this guy over here is seeing it through his lens.
It sounds like The Wolf at the End of the Block is a play that would spur much debate.
Yeah.
We're going to talk further with Ann Filmer and Tony Santiago. Ann runs the theater. Tony is one of the stars of the show. We're going to talk some more local theater, too, because I think local theater is changing before your eyes, and a lot of the mainstream press is not taking note of that. Well, some commercials, and I'll give you the news, and then we'll carry on. Welcome back. We've got Ann Filmer. We can talk off. We talk off the air. Ann Filmer's here. She founded these 11 seasons ago, the 16th Street Theater in Berwyn. You've seen Berwyn change a little. I've seen, I mean, at least last time I went out there to see you, there was like a Thai restaurant. I went, oh my God.
I know, a
Thai restaurant in Berwyn. That's crazy. One of the stars of the show is Tony Santiago, who is a theater performer here, but also a theater activist. Is that fair to say?
Fairly active, yeah.
And also a, you know, you remind me of people like Saul Alinsky, are also a community organizer.
Yeah.
The community being theater, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You started with Ike and some others, the Theater Accountability Coalition, which started with it may have been doing stuff for 3 years. I didn't notice it till I had to write a story about Hedy Weiss and the Sun-Times and a very, very well-orchestrated effort to not bar her, but hold her accountable. It wasn't really – tell me about that.
I think it was less about us pointing out or trying to hold – her accountable as much as we wanted to give an opportunity to theaters who they employ folks who they say they want to protect. They say they're about diversity and being inclusive. But if those theaters are still investing financially in folks who use a platform like a review to say things that are just harmful and hateful, then there's a conflict of interest there and a conflict of values. And we wanted to I think it was our responsibility to let those theaters know that they are missing an opportunity to represent their true values, and if they really do, they would think about whose speech they're sponsoring.
See, I wrote the main news story about that whole to do with Tracy Schwartz at the paper, and I know that you came in to meet with the editors, bosses at the Sun-Times.
Mm-hmm.
That is, are you still doing that? Because what I think you guys should be doing is holding not just the mainstream papers, which probably have the biggest clout for theaters, accountable, but to address their lack of diversity. And I'm saying this as an employee of the paper. Has that been an ongoing conversation?
It is an ongoing conversation. And what's really amazing about what happened after this summer is that things that have come up, you know, just most recently the review at court was that we as Chi-Tech didn't really have to come out as Chi-Tech and say, hey, we have to hold you accountable, because what we're noticing is that so many people in the community are doing that work already. So we are there to support those folks who are already making those conversations happen. But I very much agree with you that It's not only saying, hey, this is wrong, this is how you could do it better, but we want to be supportive of new voices, of new critics, of new spaces.
New perspectives. Definitely new perspectives.
Well, because as we're talking about the changing kind of face of Chicago theater over the last, I'm going to say over the last decade. I'm not going to put it exactly on your founding 16th Street began the change, but over the last decade, it's been changing in ways that a lot of people have not even noticed. Small theater companies still starting up. You don't have the concentrated kind of famous storefront kind of things, but that's very much what these theaters are, too. They are affordable. They are doing risk-taking work. Mm-hmm. They are employing a number of young actors, because don't you both feel that for the same reasons you two were drawn to Chicago, that allure still exists?
Oh yeah for others to come. Young people are coming here all the time to Chicago. I know it's easy to say we're here, but it is really the theater capital of the world, as it was claimed to be a while ago. But it really is, because of the reason that Tony said earlier, like when you come here, you are so, you know, it's like open arms, right? And if you don't have to have gone to a certain school or have a certain pedigree.
Right.
You can come here, you can be a pharmacist like Rich Katofsky, or you can be, you know, a fireman like Guy Van Swearingen or whoever. And you can come here, and if you just work hard, you put your head down, you're doing it all about the work, you can get something going and find a group of people that are passionate about the work. And it's not about one person. It's not about, this is me, I want to show me, and then, you know, get out of here and get into film. It's really about, people are passionate about the work and the stories being told.
That's it.
Yeah.
The story. Talk to me about the stories being told, Tony.
I think we are, in terms of how things are changing, we are, there is a departure that theater is purely for entertainment purposes. I mean, it is very entertaining. It's very fun and engaging. But for us theater artists, if we cannot model the kind of world or community we want to live in with our very art, then how can we expect other things that are very much out of our control often to go the way that we want? And that's something I didn't know when I first moved to Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's something that over the span of time of working with folks like About Face Theater or working with Oracle Productions, that I realized that we have so much more power than just putting on a really good show.
Mm-hmm.
That folks are relying on us to create a space for them to process and to understand the world a lot better through the stories that we're telling.
See, one of the things about mass entertainment, so think of comedy clubs, is people who go to them are predisposed to be entertained.
Mm-hmm.
That is what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But what theater can provide is, yes, it is possible to be entertained and have your thoughts provoked, or to be entertained and learn something. That is when entertainment rises to the level of real importance rather than superficiality.
Yep.
That is one of the hallmarks of what you've done at 16th.
Well, that was our mission to begin. You know, that wasn't like accidental. I mean, when I was thinking about what kind of theater that I wanted to start, and I wanted to do theater where I lived, and Barry and I had just bought a home in Berwyn, but it was all about, let's actually have a theater of engagement. You know, we actually like use those words that it's like, we don't need entertainment because people are entertained to death. Like, stop trying to entertain
me. Phone.
Right. I mean, the news, like, I do not need entertainment. And anyone who needs entertainment, then they are not opening their eyes because it's everywhere and it's grotesque. But what we want to do is actually have people sit in a dark room all together and see a story that's about you or that's about your neighbor.
Or about us.
About us, yeah.
Have you seen in the last decade, Jane, I know we're all sitting in a dark theater, but have you started to see a more kind of diverse crowd? Because I think certainly some of Ike's plays, you know, I think of Exit Strategy, which was at Jackalope, which really, frankly, blew me away. And it was attracting all manner of teachers, members of the Chicago.
That was incredible.
Of the Chicago Teachers Union. I went there with Karen Lewis, the head of the Chicago Teachers Union. So do you think theater is becoming more actively aware of an audience that's out there that has not been the traditional kind of theater-going audience?
Yeah.
I think yes and also no. Mm-hmm. I think that while the awareness might be there, I think the abilities or the systems that would allow a theater to really have that connection are still being figured out.
It's an organic process.
It's an organic process, but you also have theaters mostly being nonprofit who still have to rely on how they sell their tickets.
Yeah.
And even something like a subscriber base is really interesting because inherently there is this question of, well, what do my subscribers want? Because they're the ones who are continuously, offering the money.
Right. And a lot of folks. Consideration.
Exactly.
Sure.
But we're seeing that, we're seeing that the community does really want, these kind of shows and these kind of stories. So whose responsibility is it? Is it the theater? Is it the artist? Is it the playwright?
You know? It's everyone because we're all complicit.
It's a great collaborative effort too.
Yeah.
You're all complicit, but you're all, beneficiaries
of this
grand experiment that's going on. And I think it's now like a sort of cauldron, and we'll see where it goes.
I think
you have been at the forefront of it. You are certainly at the forefront of it, yes.
Yeah, Rick, I don't know if you saw Yasmina's Necklace when we did it. It's by one of our associate artists, Rohina Malik, but that's a play we ended up taking to the Goodman Theater this past fall.
Right.
The thing that just made me feel so great about that was that I think 11,000, I'm a numbers girl, so 11,000 people saw Yasmina's Necklace at the Goodman. And out of those 11,000, 2,000 had never walked through the doors of the Goodman Theater before.
I love that.
And you look out at that audience of, for Yasmina's Necklace, and you saw people that you have not been seen in the theater. And it's because Goodman decided to take on a story written by a Muslim woman who wears hijab. And then, wow, lo and behold, you get some new people into your theater.
And likewise with Ike's Lottery Day, too, when they were doing that up at Goodman, it was incredible seeing new folks, in that place. That place was very, very...
Well, you have both.
You got to put on the work.
You have both. Tony Santiago and Ann Filmer made me very, very hopeful. We'll take a short commercial break, and then we will sell the bejesus, as they say on Grown Up Radio, out of the current show at the 16th Street Theater. Coulter's The Wolf at the End of the Block. It's one of a... Ike is going to wind up being the August Wilson.
He's going to take over the world.
He's going to wind up being the August Wilson of our time.
For sure.
Yeah. We'll be right back. We are going to play you. We are loading, as we speak, a sort of one-minute clip from a sort of combined... I don't know what it is. It's a wolf trailer. It's a trailer.
It's a trailer. Well, it's actually a trailer
for a play.
Exactly.
Okay.
There's a video that goes with it too. But
theater
like,
is changing. Tony Salgado is one of the stars of The Wolf at the End of the Block, one of these shows of the 11th season of the 16th Street Theater. Runs through May 5th in a beautiful theater space in
and
Berlin.
I think we're going to extend it to May 19th. Yeah.
Good. It takes place. Much of it takes place. All right, you guys, tell me. I feel terrible that I couldn't get out there over the weekend to see it, the opening weekend, but I'm going to go out there and see it. You're not the only star of this, Tony. Though I'd like to think of you as the only star of the show.
Yes,
I know.
But as many
five
of us.
Actors,
there are other,
five
wait,
actors,
there are other people
great.
In this
yeah,
show. Are you kidding?
Oh yes, Abruzzo Mendoza, Gabriela Diaz, myself, Christian Isley, and Stephanie Diaz are also a part of this amazing production.
Yeah, and the director is Lillianne Brown, and they're killing it. These actors are killing it.
Do you allow Lillianne Brown, who's got a native Chicagoan, she's got a long, distinguished resume, does she cast the show, or do you sit in on that too, Ann?
Well, I sit in on it, but, it's her thing.
Right.
It's her thing. And we actually, we have a casting director. It was funny, Stephanie Diaz, who's in it. So when I saw the production at, it was Teatro Vista,
even though
it was at Victory Gardens, Christensen Theater, Teatro Vista. And when I saw it, I was like, okay, we have to do this at 16th Street. So I hope Ike will let me do it there. And if it's not the same cast, and we recast it, I want Stephanie Diaz, who's an artistic associate, to play that role of the journalist. Because I Sandra Marquez is so awesome, who played the role originally. Amazing. But I also thought, ooh, it would be great to see Stephanie Diaz in that. You know, great play. You want to see multiple people do those roles.
Oh, sure.
And so so that's when I, you know, reached out to Ike, and he was cool with letting us do it. So Stephanie Diaz, but she's also our casting director, so she helped out. But Lillian, actually, you know, Ike was a big, I mean, Ike was like, hey, you got to get Tony Santiago as Nunley.
Well, you understudied the role.
Yeah, Bear Bellinger originated. Sure. He was incredible, and I got to watch that whole, because they, you know, Ike was working on that show and writing that show while they were rehearsing it at Teatro Vista. So
basically, it is about a man named Abe who walks into a bar he probably shouldn't have walked into. It's a classic Chicago cop bar. I've been in a few in my time. I'm not sure I could find one anymore, and I'm sure I would have some trouble walking into one these days anyway, unless I could pretend I was an ancient retired cop. And he gets beaten up. And what happens afterward, you play his boss at a restaurant who tries to come to his aid and tries to get some kind of resolution out of this whole thing, but it is shadowed by, and you go to, with the aid of another person, to a journalist in the hope that she might be able to get to the bottom. It sounds it sounds to me like a mystery.
It really sounds like a mystery.
It's a mystery. It's very much like a noir.
Nothing cut and dry. Nothing black and white.
No one's guilty, but no one's innocent either. Mm-hmm. And I think that puts the audience in a really great position where they have to wonder, you know, did he deserve this? What would he have to do in order to be perfect in this situation? Mm-hmm. What story are we going to tell the public about this in order to really push this narrative?
Yep.
Well, it addresses a million of things going on in Chicago these days. And again, I haven't seen it yet, but I certainly get the gist of it that in many communities in this town, nobody trusts the cops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody trusts the cops.
Yeah.
Your part seems to, as Nunley, you then wind up in, I can't tell if it's the same bar or a similar bar, in a conversation.
Yeah,
that's sort of the second half of the show. That sounds unbelievably intriguing.
It's a really great scene that Ike wrote, because after the main character Abe, you know, comes to work the next day after being beaten up, you know, Nunley's trying to take care of him, and he brings him out to a bar that is referred to as a hipster bar. So it's a very casual, chic situation, and you feel like everything is okay until we meet another stranger.
Yeah.
And this person passing through has a really interesting perspective of what it's like to be.
He has a great monologue. That person is Christian Isley, who you spoke with during Harbor Gate.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And he is also a cop. You don't really know.
Well, we find out.
Fascinating.
We find in the scene that he's a cop off duty, and he's hanging out, and he really wants to. It's what it's amazing about what, and this is really a testament to Christian, is that you know what feels like a bad guy or a bad person, he actually starts saying a lot of the same things that the other characters are going through in the audience. You can tell that the audience is really wrangling with that idea that, like, he's saying some really truthful things, but I have to decide whether or not I trust him or if I'm aligned with the way
he's approached. Seems like both of those characters seem to want something very important from the other character, yes?
And there's a lot of truth-telling going on, and some that's, you know, not so easy. Not so pleasant, but it is a truth, you know, especially when you're out there, you know, it's his perspective, you know, I'm out there wearing a uniform, you know, people can see me, but I can't see you.
Let's listen. Dan, can we listen to that 1 minute thing? I think it's very... Can we? Yes, he
Maybe
says
I know
yes.
exactly
Here
what
it is.
Happened last night.
Word on me. Project heads. Refugee.
Sometimes when I get to a new place, like if I'm in a weird party or a new block or the train, I get in and I glance around. And the first thing I do after I get in and I glance around is look for my way out.
I didn't want to, like, spy on you guys. Never did. Nothing happened to us. I left it alone, but something happened here.
Nothing else matters to me than making sure he can breathe. Well, who in the hell do you call when you can't call the cops? cop? Word on. Well, who in the hell do you call when you can't call the cop? Well, who in the hell do you call when you can't call the cop? Word on. Well, who in the hell do you call when you can't call the cop?
This stuff happens more than you think, to more people than you know.
Nobody cares.
Watch out for
blood.
Gestapo.
Nobody cares when blood is.
Please, if anyone ever asked, tell them, please. You tell them I was never here.
That is an unbelievable. And have you done that for all of your shows?
No, this is something special. We sometimes do trailers. We did some for Broken Fences, but sometimes it gets kind of costly, you know.
Sure.
We have a video that goes with them, with this one, and we thought it'd be fun.
If you go to 16thStreetTheater.org, which you should, to get tickets, and you will be able to see that video's on the website.
That's right.
And that's 16thStreetTheater.org. Or just put in 16th Street Theater.
Yeah, just Google
Berlin.
It, right?
Yeah, it's running through May 5th and will probably be extended through May 19th. And you will see me there one of these nights. Because I have to see this because I'm a huge Ike Holter fan, a devoted Ann Filmer fan, and now a brand new Tony Santiago film, too. Are you both, you have made me in this hour hopeful for the future of Chicago theater.
Oh yeah, it's getting stronger and stronger all the time. I mean, I cannot believe when the theaters that like I've never heard of and these upstarts and the work that they are doing. There is sophistication, and I mean that in a very exciting way.
Sure.
Right, where there is just a whole level. My husband and I were just talking about this. Like, there's just a whole level of acting. There's always been great actors. But a whole new level of real straight up fantastic storytelling and all different kinds of storytelling, not just one Chicago style storytelling.
Right, right.
But all different kinds of style.
Well, I think that whole notion of Chicago style has been fractured. It's like a.
Yeah, it's about time.
Or it's like if it was
it's
a diamond, at least there's so many more facets to it now.
Yes.
Tony Santiago, I cannot wait to see you perform on stage because I love the way you
Can't
think.
Wait for you to be
he rocks it. He rocks it. You're going to love him.
And Filmer, you know how much I adore you and your family. Family and your theater. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Very interesting hour. 16th Street Theater. Dan Long will put this up on the website, and you'll be able to. If you're not understanding 16thStreetTheater.org, you probably shouldn't be going to theater in the first
place.
That's right. Just stay home, watch TV or something. You know, watch some silly superheroes movie.